That's the end of the first half. As the teams head to the locker room, the Spartans lead the Bulldogs by a score.
You guys stink.
Jeez, Coach, we're only down a couple of points.
No, I mean you guys really smell. You need to hit the showers. And here, I got every one of you new bars of soap from the Sterling Soap Company. Each bar is artisan crafted using natural ingredients and essential oils. They also have shave soaps, colognes, beard balm, and a whole lot more. Now get in there.
But Coach, we have another half to play.
I don't care. I can't stand to be around you.
A few minutes later.
All right, bring it in tight. You guys are still playing terrible, but you're smelling great out there. Now listen, you're going to need to stock up for the rest of the season. We got a lot of tough games left. So go to sterlingsoap.com after the game. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com. You got that?
Yes, Coach.
Great. sterlingsoap.com on three. One, two, three.
sterlingsoap.com.
You know, we often watch football games that at the end of each field, we have these structures that become quite popular, especially at the end of games, because they usually mean points. Well, Timothy B. Brown of footballarchaeology.com joins us today to tell us about the history of the goalposts. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey there. Good to chat and looking forward to kind of tearing things down as we talk about a post.
Tearing things down as you talk about a post. Oh boy, I haven't seen one of those games in a while where the crowd tears them down. But those used to be quite popular in the 70s and 80s, weren't they?
Yeah, and even before that, there's a lot of, I mean, we think people tore things down, but man, in like the 20s and 30s, it was like every game people would do that.
Yeah, I can't even imagine how much those things must cost nowadays at these stadiums, and probably an expensive endeavor if somebody rips them down today.
Yeah.
So, but okay, you recently wrote an article, and that's why we're talking about this, called The History of the Goalpost. And what can you tell us about the history of these fine pieces of art, I would call them, at the end of each field?
Well, yeah, so it's actually like 2 weeks ago, I think it was, we were talking about goalposts. And I said, you know, when they originally made them, like really the first few years, they just erect two posts and then put a string between the posts, like 10 feet off the ground. Right. And, you know, that was kind of the case, like earlier on, you know, back in England, you know, when they were playing both soccer and rugby, you know, if you kick the ball under that rope or crossbar for soccer and you kicked it over for rugby. Right. And so that was kind of the original thing going on.
And maybe play a game of badminton afterwards, right?
Or croquet.
Or croquet. Okay.
But like, you know, when goalposts began, they were all the, you know, what I'll just call the H style, right? Kind of the traditional two posts and a crossbar. And they were planted on the goal line, which is why it's called the goal line, right? And so that went on, you know, for a long, long time. And, you know, a lot of them were just, especially the like small towns. I mean, they just, I did a post one time about them, just images of just really cheesy, beat up, like crooked goalposts. I mean, it was just the best they could do with scrap lumber. Right. But so anyways, you know, so the goalposts were on the goal line from the beginning, but they got in the way, you know, and so their stories of, and the way I told this particular tidbit, I was focused on Harvard-Yale because, like, in 1899, there was a Harvard player was trying to score. You know, they had the ball on the two or something like that, and, you know, ends up running at the goalposts, you know, and the Yale defenders kind of brace themselves against the posts and are able to stop the Harvard runner, and then they end up either losing or tying. And then similar thing happened a few years later, except the Harvard runner they ran into the goalpost and fell back. So it wasn't even a defender that stopped him. But so the point is that they got in the way, you know, and this is before the forward pass. So, but they got in the way and they were an obstacle. And so after that 1899 event, there was a Harvard guy, Edward Manley, who invented what was called the safety goalpost. And it's, you know, if you look at old pictures, you'll see these things popping up from time to time. And he patented it, you know, he has a patent on them. But it was basically, you had the two posts like normal, but they were planted like 3 to 4, even 5 yards behind the goal line. And then, so you'd have a kind of a, you'd have a post, and then you'd have like an extension and bracing that would hold up the uprights that were actually over the goal line, right? So the posts were several yards off the line, but the uprights and the crossbar were over the goal line. And in his patent, he shows a single, single post design, but I think, they were making them out of wood, and they just couldn't figure out how to support all that weight on that one post. So anyways, I've never seen an image of one of those early ones. But so everybody used either the H design or the safety goalpost design. And I think part of the reason why why the safety goalpost didn't turn out to be that popular is that he charged $50 for every installation. And so he probably didn't collect on all of them, but that would have kept $50 was, some pretty good money back then.
Yeah.
So just another little thing on the evolution of goalposts. I found there's a lot of, like a lot of things. Amos Alonzo Stagg is credited with being the guy who padded the first goalpost, but he didn't. There was, I found examples from like 1896 of places that padded their goalpost. And then, like, I've read things like, Stagg, saying Stagg invented them, but they were out there, and I've got images, and I think I've got them in the tidbit, images of padded goalposts. And yet in 1905, Chicago's field still didn't have padded goalposts. So, he clearly wasn't the,
Invented them, he didn't use them, right?
yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, sorry, I don't believe that. 1906, he wrapped a mattress around the post. So anyways, so then you get into the whole, okay, goal line versus end line. And so it was always on the goal line. And then in college, they were, they moved the goalpost to the end line in 27. And the rationale was kind of somewhat safety oriented, but it was also, back then you didn't have hash marks. And so, you could have the ball way over near the sideline, right? I mean, you could that where you that's where you could be on fourth down when you're trying to kick a field goal. So part of the rationale for moving it to the end line was to give people better angles to kick. Now it would be 10 yards further, so presumably you'd have to be closer too, for the same kind of distance. So anyways, and then like the NFL basically did the same thing. They used college rules, but then like in 1932, 31 or 32, they had like 20% of their games ended in ties. So they said, okay, we got to stop all these ties. So they moved the goal post to the goal line to try to, encourage scoring. And I'm not sure it did a whole lot, but, because both teams still had more or less equal chances.
Well, they had what, a championship game. Was it Sammy Baugh? They scored a safety because he threw a pass and it hit the goal post, and they counted as a safety, and Washington lost by 2 or something, if I remember correctly. It affected the game with that safety by his pass.
There were
So
some,
it did increase scoring that way too, I guess.
yeah, I guess so. I mean, there were some strange rules about, can you, because I did a story on doinks, fairly recently. And so some of them, sometimes the doink was automatically, the play ended. Other times it was still a live ball. So, who knows? But then, so then the NFL, they moved it to the end line in 74. And that's largely because, in the 60s is really when soccer style kicking took over. I mean, they'd had soccer style before that, but that's when it really became, popular. And they were just booting the ball from so far out that they said, okay, we got to move this thing. We got to move these things back and make it harder again. But then the other piece of that is like in 66, there's a guy named Jim Trimble who he had been, I think, the Eagles head coach. Pretty sure he's Eagles head coach
Could be.
before that, but he was the Montreal Alouettes coach, and then he got fired. And so he's, you know, chatting with a buddy at breakfast one time and talking about a game where, like, the defense had on the Canadian field, you know, they had the defender had braced himself against the goalpost, and supposedly one of them was toying around with their fork. And they looked at it and kind of said, you know, we could, you could redesign the goalpost to have a single post and then kind of gooseneck over, you know. So they came up with essentially the same design as the safety goalpost from 1900, but it was all new and it was aluminum, you know. And so they were able to convince the NFL to adopt their goalpost in 1967. So, and then they had increased to like 20 feet high. Now I think they're 30 feet high on the uprights. But the NCAA, you can use either, you know, the H style or the, you know, slingshot gooseneck, you know, style of or Telegoal, which was their brand name. So that's kind of the, that's the story of goalposts. And I didn't get into the width of them. That changed from time to time, but.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, like at the high school level and below, I think schools can still make them. I know like some of them, I've been at schools like where you can tell like their shop made them or, you know, shop class made them. You get these crazy looking yeah. engineered designs and everything. And somewhere I have a collection of them. You know, I was visiting my mother when she lived down in Dallas, Fort Worth area. And I was driving by a middle school and I saw this goalpost. I'm like, oh my God, I never saw anything like that. I was taking pictures. So I had like a collection of these things. I got to dig that up sometime. And there's really some really crazy looking ones that, I worked officiated games on and ones I just had observed, but yeah, some interesting ideas come out of people's minds on the goalpost.
Well, the old shop class thing is interesting too, because, you know, when I can't remember if I published a tidbit about, or maybe it's still in the works, I don't know, but about like the yardage markers on fields. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if I published that or not. Anyways, you know, the little conical, there's been different designs, but all the things that should, yeah, I published it last week. Anyways, so like in high schools, a lot of the signage and all that kind of stuff were shop classes made that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And there were things where like shop, kind of home ec and shop classes would make tackling dummies, you know, I mean, they were just trying to save a buck, right? And so you have the girls sew these canvas tackling dummies, and then the boys would get sawdust and, you know, fill them up, and, you know, that's what you use for a tackling dummy. So anyway, shop classes have played a big role in high school football. Right?
Yes, they did. So yeah, everybody at the school can get involved in a football game. That's for sure.
Yeah. So it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, if you go back years later and you were in that shop class and, you know, you've been out of high school for decades, you can go back and tell your grandkids, hey, I helped make that, you know, back in 1972. So we welded that. So, yeah, some good stuff. Yeah, goalposts are always an interesting thing, you know, and it's unique to football. And there's a lot of different devices and people and rules that are unique to football. And you dig into them and tell about the people and the events and the history, an evolution of some of these things, just like you did at the goalposts today, and your tidbits. And maybe you could share with folks where they can catch on to some of these tidbits.
Yeah, just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack, you know, site. So you can subscribe, you can follow, or just bookmark it and, you know, show up in it whenever you want. But if you subscribe, you'll get an email every time that I publish something new. So then you don't have to search for it. It just arrives in your inbox. But kind of whatever works for you.
That's the way to do it. You know, make it nice and easy. And you even have, you know, the paid subscribe thing. So you get even more content, and that's the way to do it. You get all the goodies from Tim. So make sure you check that out, and check out Tim each Tuesday here as he talks to us about some great antiquity of football. And Tim, we look forward to that again next week.
Very good. Look forward to it. Thanks, sir.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Sports History Network, where legends live on and the past plays loud.
Welcome to the place where history's proud, from gridiron glory to the hardwood stars, from the racetrack heat to Olympic bars. It's the voices, the stories, the moments you miss, told by fans and pros who live for this. Hook Anthemic, the Sports History Network, where the past comes alive, podcasts and blogs that keep the flame high. From Babe to Brady, Alley to the Dome, if it's history and sports, then this is the home. SportsHistoryNetwork.com, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.